It's me, the one and only Mr. DRG, back on the DSJMP, on the road once again with the Detour, where we take alternate routes for the wrestling alternatives, the place where you get to hear the lovely road noises like the gate at my business that I'm leaving right now to go home, because work sucks, I had bronchitis, and this shit is gonna get real, son. We're doing hashtag TNA Watch 2015 with your special guest host, the one and only Biohazard. How you doing, Bio?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on today.
No problem, considering that Vamp held a gun to my head and said, "You have to!" I'm just joking.
Don't worry, he was holding the other gun to my head.
So. Yeah, said, talk to DRG, damn it. He sounds lonely while he's on the road. Only thing he has to do is pray to Jesus.
That's a vamp for you.
As you can hear, DRG does not have the audio recording quality that the DSJP offers on the WrestleCast or Second Shift, so we're doing this like old school G's, and we're talking on a phone. You know, what you used to do with your friends? Call them up instead of sending an instant message or tweet? We're having a conversation the real way. So,
what's a phone?
Exactly. It's a thing in your pocket. It's called a small computer nowadays. Oh, shit.
Something from the Dark Ages.
What we plan on covering today is hashtag TNA Watch 2015, which everyone knows has been kicked off over the past 2 weeks. Now, we wanted to get this done before last week, whenever everything was in full force, and it just didn't seem to happen. I had a family vacation that I was going to go on, which we all know that real world takes priority. And as everybody knows, Duncan is in a successful rock band that is just touring with Fozzy right now and killing it. So he wasn't able to make it yet, but we finally got our heads together. Two people who are not biased in our ways and actually talk open-mindedly to discuss this TNA Watch, the death, the funeral march that is coming for TNA. Now, Bio, what do you want to start off with? What should we kick off with the Meltzy report and how this whole thing kind of blew up in TNA fans' face?
Yeah, let's start with there. All I really want to go into that is just believe what comes from the actual horse's mouth, not from a third party.
Very valuable point. I get a kick out of people because I call the Wrestling Observer newsletter the Quran of the IWC, because much like how people like to point at religious people who are religious in their lives, they have a certain book that they always turn to, and that's the one thing that they go for. Well, if we put the idol of wrestling as something that we're worshiping, then many fans on the internet turn to the IWC, and with the Wrestling Observer newsletter of David Meltzer having coined something called a 5-star rating in the past, people think that it gives him merit to be the end-all be-all as a news source. And I have nothing against Meltzer for doing what he's doing. It's his gimmick. His gimmick is to push numbers and get people to the websites. That's fine by me. But I also believe that in order for me to know something as fact, I like to hear it coming from the people who, I don't know, own these things, like a Destination America, who own the contract for TNA through 2016. Which at this point, that's really all that we know. Anything else that has come out has been speculation or something that he put out on a newsletter without citing a source. So without there being a source to go to, I tend to keep my mind and options open.
I think the big thing, though, is that TNA and Destination America, even if there is something going on, they are going to keep quiet about it until, you know, you get really close to the time. They did it with Spike, too. Mm-hmm. So, until they actually say something, you just take what Dave says with a grain of salt. There's not really, there's no validity to what he's saying.
Exactly. It's one of those things, like, and I get the distrust, especially after what happened with the TMZ report with Spike TV, and its smart business strategy for them to keep quiet on all fronts. I don't necessarily think it's a smart strategy to send an email to Bill Apter over at Russell One and say that any and all defamation of character against TNA or its affiliates will be prosecuted, because these are dirt sheet writers. These are speculative journalists at their best. That's what they do to make money, so you can't really sue them for anything because they're not really slandering you. It's interesting to say the least, but at this point, we really don't know nothing outside of the fact that ROH and Destination America got a deal worked out together to host ROH as a lead-in to TNA on Wednesdays, which we saw this past Wednesday. That was the only concrete thing that came out, because it's the only thing Destination America actually put a press release about.
Yeah, and inside that, even like the Ring of Honor executives, they were saying they were trying to get Destination America to be America's destination for wrestling. So if that's the case, why would you cancel TNA? You could have both shows. You could even sign a third show if you want. If Destination America wants to be the home for wrestling, I don't think they would end up canceling TNA.
So that's a conspiracy we can put out there, is that next is GFW. Good old Jeff Jarrett going to be the closeout for TNA on Wednesdays with a one-hour program.
1 hour for, that'd be 4 hours. They could top Raw.
4 hours of alternate.
Combined viewership, they could top Raw.
Oh. 4 hours of alternate wrestling viewing for those who need a little bit more of a fix than just what you get on the mainstream stage. 4 hours of wrestling, that's just nuts. I'd get to the point where I'd have to selectively view those, because ROH is already in a battle. They are going up head-to-head-to-head with Lucha Underground and NXT in that time slot. So you're going to see a little bit of fallback on those ratings, which we kind of saw this week, where they didn't do as stellar as some people thought they were going to. But in all honesty, they have the syndication with Sinclair, so there's a lot of people in those markets that might have already watched the show on Saturday or Friday or its first run air on their Sinclair station instead of watching on Destination America. But do you think that the ratings for ROH are really what Destination America is concerned with, or is it growing the brand awareness with that television network?
I think it's more of growing brand awareness. It's the fact that TNA is not doing the best. They're getting 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 people. When they switch, now they're doing 100, 200, 300. Mm-hmm. So even Ring of Honor only got about 150,000 views. It's also they have to get adjusted to that Wednesday. So it's more of, I feel like they knew that's what's going to happen when they move to Wednesdays. That's going to drop the ratings. So it's more of a awareness of Destination America. Hey, come to our station to watch these great wrestling companies.
Exactly, as you hear the road noises on the detour. Because on the detour, we leave shit in so you can have a wonderful experience on your drive. Now, I know that the ratings were low, and a lot of that is moving from one time slot to the next. I think ROH in total with the replay that they had something like 259,000 viewers, and TNA had 300 and something thousand. I think it was 343 or some shit like that. And we can expect that to grow when people start adjusting to the times. I personally think that Wednesday is a better night overall than Friday. Friday is just, everybody likes to go out, everybody likes to have fun, and yes, they rely on the 3+ numbers and the 7+ numbers from DVRs, but you're going to see more people coming in on a Wednesday if they have to go out for something, and then turning it on Thursday than what you would see on Saturday or Sunday, and then having to get all the way through the weekend and all the other stuff going on before they get a chance to watch it. But one of the things, you brought up Joe Koff, and he had an interview with Bill Apter that I found interesting, and everybody that has listened to all these people on Twitter with the interactions between the two, Joe Koff actually said that TNA is a great neighbor for ROH and that they can benefit from each other very well. And I 100% agree with that. I think that there are many benefits to these things. But I'm curious, because Joe also mentioned the fact that they've been in talks with Destination America since before TNA left Spike. So why the secrecy? Why has Destination America held this ace up their sleeve for so long?
that goes back to the they want it to be the home for wrestling. I'm sure that once TNA and Spike TV, when they split their separate ways, TNA was just trying to find just a channel to get on because they need to be viewed and people need to know more about TNA. Destination America was probably the first one that bit the hook. They said, hey, we have Ring of Honor under our belt. Let's go ahead and sign TNA. They need a time slot now. Was Ring of Honor, since they're already syndicated, they didn't need it as bad, whereas TNA did. So TNA, they signed them immediately, and since they wanted to be the home of wrestling, hey, now we have Ring of Honor.
Well, it's definitely a smart decision, and it's Billy Corgan put out a tweet on Twitter, as well as many other people. Rockstar Spud in interviews with Busted Open Radio and several other places talk about this being a great thing for fans. But whenever this news broke, there were some interesting tweets. Now, I know you want to bring up the MVP one, but one that I wanted to touch on before we got there is that the Young Bucks, I believe it was Matt Jackson, when this news broke from Destination America's Twitter account, Matt Jackson actually replied to the tweet and said, "Is this for real?" So I'm not sure how many of the talents actually knew about any of this.
Yeah. From my perspective, it seems like almost nobody knew about it.
Now, do you think that's a shady business practice for Destination America to do that to TNA? Because MVP put out his own little Session 16 talking about it, and I can agree, as an independent contractor, he needs to know because he's in control of his own brand. But Destination America technically doesn't have to do that for TNA.
Yeah, if TNA executives didn't know either, there's not really anybody to tell the talent. Because by the sound of it, it seems like maybe Dixie Carter knew, maybe the very top of the top knew, but outside of that, it doesn't seem like a whole lot of people knew about it.
I think it definitely blindsided a lot of people for us, even for ROH talent to not know. I'm pretty sure that it was Joe Koff at the top of the food chain and maybe some select people that he knew wasn't going to stooge off the information to other people kept it under their vest and did an excellent job, because this thing stunned numerous people. Numerous big-time inside scoop reporters like the Melts had no knowledge of this coming out, no reports, and that's funny coming from a guy who has an inside source at Destination America that he didn't even know about this. It's curious to me.
I think it's funny. The fact that Meltzer claims to have all these sources, but if nobody knew about it other than Destination America, where's the source? Because they want it to be the home of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say that. All he said was TNA was going to be canceled.
Yeah, in September.
I feel like if they wanted to be home for wrestling, they're not going to cancel it.
Well, I love what Meltzer does, because in a lot of his stuff, he leaves outs for him. Like, if something that he predicts doesn't come true, he can always say Vince or creative changed their mind. And inside his release on the IWC Koran, he said that nothing was finalized as of yet. So that means that they could have changed their mind. But I find it curious, because one of the tweets that got me is Billy Corgan going back and forth with Meltzer. And he stated that whenever Destination America officials came to creative headquarters of TNA in Tennessee, which, yes, Devil Vamp, TNA has a headquarters. They came there and sat down and covered all through the booking of 2016 together, right? And Corgan made a statement on Twitter to Meltzer that he was being worked himself. That is what gets me really interested, because if this turns out to be an elaborate plot that Dixie and Joe Koff of ROH already knew about in Destination America, because they are passionate about being that next destination spot for wrestling, we're willing to buy into it. You've got people that are willing to go to levels of secrecy for the sake of kayfabe that we haven't seen in a long time.
And they say kayfabe was dead.
I know, right? It's an interesting time. One of the things that has happened on social media, though, is we saw a lot of interactions on that very first day between certain people. And hands down, thank you to the pro wrestling savior that is EC3 for putting out a tweet to Roderick Strong telling him to take his shitty little boots and go home. It was hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. But they've had several people interacting back and forth and making claims and little jabs, like EC3 saying, "Why would I shake the hand of someone like Mr. Anderson? This is wrestling, it's not whatever else. Oh, don't forget to watch Ring of Honor on Destination America." That kind of stuff is hilarious to me. That's why I love following things on social media.
Do you think they're going to do any kind of crossover now that they're on the same network?
That was the thing that I wanted to get to when we start talking about potential benefits and downfalls. There's a lot of potential, and Jim Ross talked about this in his podcast a lot, about how ROH and TNA would benefit a lot from a working relationship. Not necessarily merging the companies, as some people have said before in the past, but trading talent for the sake of freshness. Now, imagine this. You have Ethan Carter walk out on ROH's stage, defeat Roderick Strong, Mr. ROH, and then introduce the person that he wants to thank the most, his Aunt Dee. Think about the nuclear heat that Dixie Carter would get walking into an ROH building.
That would be very interesting. Have him walk in with the TNA title on his shoulder too.
Exactly.
Extra icing on the cake.
We're talking post-Slammiversary, because I fully see with the trajectory that he's on right now, I see them building up Kurt Angle by giving him the victories over both Spud and Austin Aries at Destination X this week, and then heading into Slammiversary, Ethan Carter being the one to take down the unstoppable machine that has been Kurt Angle as of late. And at Slammiversary's live event, they also have another live event planned for, I think it's that next set of tapings. So if they do that and they have that moment where they can have like Roderick Strong, who has been seen backstage at TNA events lately, have him come in and do a run-in at this next set of live tapings, only for Ethan to return to ROH's tapings with that championship belt. There's so much meat on the bone with how they could do cross promotions. But do you think that there could be potential downfalls of, say, lending out a person like a Bobby Roode or an Austin Aries to an ROH demographic, where they have already this idea of AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels and Samoa Joe, these people who were so mistreated in TNA, going to there? Do you think it would cause more of a rift in fans with TNA overall than it would benefit them?
Well, that's a really complicated situation, because you do have like guys like AJ who says, "Oh, I was mistreated in TNA." And Ring of Honor, when if people come in from TNA, they're gonna have to be heels no matter what.
Right.
Which is gonna be the big thing, and that could build your heels even better. But then you have the problem of if they come into TNA, Ring of Honor talent, they're gonna be heels as well.
Exactly. Now you could get away. You could get away with certain people, because like AJ, even though he's a member of the Bull, I don't see AJ doing it, especially after his recent turning down of the Hall of Fame induction, which I heard that on the WrestleCast. AJ Styles actually put out a tweet to one of his fans that said, "Hey, you must hate TNA that much." AJ said from his own Twitter account that he is staying loyal to the two companies that he is with right now, and that's New Japan and ROH, but he does not in no way hate TNA. I don't think that there isn't something there for later on. I just think that his contract, being that it goes through 2015, he doesn't have the flexibility to do it. It's the working relationship that New Japan and ROH have that he's able to be dual contracted with them.
Now, is he officially signed with New Japan working for ROH, or is it the other way around?
No, he's officially signed with New Japan, but with the working relationship between ROH and New Japan right now, he's been featured on their shows. And they've even gone so far as to put him in the opener for the credits and stuff, because he will be on some of those shows on Destination America. But his contract is with New Japan, and it runs through 2015. It might be the early part of 2016, because I believe that when he signed, it was right after Wrestle Kingdom 9. Now, Kat is probably going to blow up in my ear saying, actually, it was Wrestle Kingdom 8.
Well, that's the whole thing. AJ wouldn't go to TNA if he signed with New Japan.
No.
Or if it was with, he was signed with Ring of Honor and landed to New Japan, I could see him going back to TNA if they start a working relationship.
Right.
But right. Since he's with New Japan, I don't see AJ going at all.
See, I think one of the biggest things is AJ, whenever he left this, and I give him full credit for it. I don't hold anything against AJ because he wanted a certain amount of money, and I don't hold it against TNA for saying, we don't have the money to give to you right now. That was the whole thing that put WCW out of business, was paying people more than what they could afford to pay them. So letting him go, AJ made the step up and got a good deal out of New Japan. And because he can pick up those extra paychecks with Ring of Honor, it's just helping him more and more. So I think that if TNA was to come back with a decent offer for something, especially when they start picking up touring dates and things, as they're already starting to do, that will be the way that they can entice AJ back. But as for right now, if you've got a company that you're working for 1, maybe 2 months out of every 3, I would keep that, because you're getting a month off to stay at home while they're running the Super Juniors. You're getting a month off to stay at home while they're running the other divisions. It's okay for him to do it right now, because financially he's still making good bank and getting the time at home, which is what always appealed to him with the TNA schedule over a WWE schedule.
Which there is an interesting article about that, but we'll save that for WrestleCast, since this is the alternative.
Right. Now, there was, if we're going to talk contracts, I saw an article earlier talking about Samoa Joe and how WWE is trying to persuade Ring of Honor to no longer tape the match of Joe and AJ versus the Addiction, now known as the KDR. The reason why is because, well, the reason that was given in the article is that they're expediting signing Joe to an exclusive deal, and they're trying to stop Ring of Honor from doing that because WWE, just like everybody else, was caught off guard by the signing of a national deal by Ring of Honor. How much merit there is to that, I'm not sure, because, like I said, this is dirt sheets. You got to give all of them the same amount of credit. But I can see that happening. If Joe's going to be a staple of the NXT brand that they're going to take out touring, that they're planning on doing, I can understand them not wanting him to be featured on other programming.
Yeah, I saw part of that article where it was like the reason they signed Samoa Joe, there we go, was because Kevin Owens is going to the main roster. Sami Zayn's out of action till October. Sami's now out of action. So you're losing 3 big name stars.
Right.
Now you bring in Samoa Joe, there's your big name star.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he has the injury in a match with Tyson Kidd. And everybody goes, oh, see, it's because he's a TNA. He went and trained right. No.
There was an article posted about that saying that they're doing more research into what actually happened. And so far it's showing that it was just a fluke accident. It wasn't anybody. It wasn't Tyson Kidd landing wrong. It wasn't Joe doing a move wrong. It was just happened to... He hit a bump, and it just happened to jar his spine. That's all it was.
It happens, but in all honesty, I hadn't seen the footage for it. I hope that it's all a work, in that they're playing up the muscle buster as being something that injures people. But all prayers and thoughts, yes, Vamp, prayers and thoughts go out to Tyson Kidd for a speedy recovery. I'm interested by this because if WWE is... the idea of them having the open contract that they did with Joe and with Rhino is so appealing to me, because guys like AJ Styles or guys like, say, a Christopher Daniels and Kazarian would be more open to doing that WWE NXT route, because they could take the lower pay grade that they're going to get with NXT and still supplement the income by working indies at televised events. But if WWE is going to pull that back with this ROH deal and Joe, then I hope that it doesn't scare off some of the bigger names that might be able to make more, because from what I understand, and this is, I have not seen anybody's paycheck stub, but from what I understand, those guys in NXT are clearing like 40 to 60,000 for a contract, right?
That's what I heard, yeah.
Okay. Now, I know for a fact, based on what Manic has posted in interviews and in his Instagram pictures, that he clears 80K plus a year working for TNA, and that's not doing house shows. And that doesn't include any of his other independent dates that he works too. So if they're getting a base salary for Manic at 80,000, you got to figure somebody like Kazarian or Daniels to bury the hatchet, go back over, they could clear 120K off of a speculation, clear 120K and not have to work as many indie dates as well. But of course, this is all coming from something that people consider to be a company that has no money. Oh.
Yeah, because Panda Energy isn't $1 million corporation or anything. No, not at all.
Oh, no. And what's even funnier is Dixie Carter was quoted in a Grantland article stating that since 2000 and I believe it was 2008, they have been financially independent and paid back all the loans to Panda Energy in that time. And everything that they've made has been off of TNA's own dime and television deals, global deals, their reach globally. So, for people,
I think that's a big thing too. They have a lot of syndication around the world.
Oh, they're in over 100 countries.
They just re-signed a deal for Italy too.
And another one for Portugal, and I believe Brazil was the other one as well. But
so they could survive even if they get booted off American TV. The only problem is they would have to tour those countries, because if you get off of American TV, Americans are gonna and not to go to your show.
Right. And there was the idea of TNA actually upping and moving their headquarters to a London or a Aberdeen, something like that. While I can understand that being a tempting option, I don't think that it's smart, considering the fact that these are talents that are American-based as your primary core group of a roster. One of the reasons why they like working for TNA so much, from the interviews that I've seen and heard, is that it's so centralized with where they go. They're either flying to Nashville, which is for some people, you know, an hour or two flight, or they're flying to Florida back and forth. Now, when they do touring dates and different things, they'll be there for 4 or 5 days, but then get a month off to go back home and recuperate. The idea of flying all these people over there to London or to Germany or wherever they move corporate structure to, having to move them back and forth just adds up more and more cost. So you're looking at either a roster that's going to get cut, or you're looking at a financial situation, which is what exactly TNA is trying to avoid.
I would totally agree there.
It's always interesting, especially between like Ring of Honor and TNA, because for as much as people like to look into the business side of WWE, there's at least data that you can look into there. They are a publicly traded company. They have financial reports that they put out publicly. TNA, Ring of Honor, CZW, WXW in Germany, Preston City Wrestling, none of those people put out any type of financials. So you're going off of speculation. And that's where everything gets a little murky. Everybody likes to have, oh, I've got the inside scoop. Well, you got an idea, but you don't really have factual data to support that idea. Now, with all of this stuff and hashtag TNA Watch, I've got to ask, did you watch TNA this week?
I actually did.
You did. Did it make you happy, or did it make you go, oh, man, they're doing the same old shit?
A little of both.
I concur.
There was a couple of things I didn't necessarily understand. I'm still kind of rocky on the Dollhouse. I like the group, but I don't know if it's maybe I missed the show and I'm not understanding the story or what's going on. I understand that Jade and Marty Bell came in to help Taryn Terrell to beat Awesome Kong, but I might have missed why they actually officially came in. The Best of Five series matches, match-wise, phenomenal so far. But why should I care? That's, you know what I mean?
Especially considering that they're building this whole curse thing around the titles. Now, going back to the dollhouse, the thing about Jade and Marty being associated with Taryn was more of a swerve type situation, but since then, I think that Marty and Jade have taken a little bit too much of a backseat role. I was glad to see the whole story progress between Brooke and Jade this week, and then Marty and Jade went and attacked Rebel for it, so it kind of gives them their own story to go with while Taryn is still focusing on hers. And when they started this whole thing with her and Gail, it's about her coming out of the shadows of Gail Kim, which has been something that the Knockouts division has needed for years. Because if it's not a match with Gail Kim, it just hasn't been the best quality match. But for her to sit there and take that role and run with it, and in this heel character, the complete flip that she's done has been really cool to see. I liked them using the real life elements of Robert Irvine, the celebrity chef that is married to Gail Kim, and her associating with Gail Kim's stepdaughters. And then I loved watching them attack Gail Kim's ring finger and focus on that just to take the ring off so it could be another stab towards Robert. I'm thinking that there's going to be more with Kong coming up. I just don't know that once the Gail Kim storyline's done, unless they keep building up Jade and Marty with side stories, I don't really know where Taryn's going to go next.
Which is the point I was trying to make. It's like, there's a lot of things going on in TNA. The matches are phenomenal, but you have to have an overall picture with the story.
Mm-hmm.
Just little anecdotes here and there don't actually tell a giant story. Right. They add to it, sure, but there's a point of why should I care?
Yeah, there's that where's the direction, where are we heading? And I like, you touched on the Best of Five series. One of the things that I really liked is that there was more thought into this than I anticipated going back and looking at some of the past episodes. Because they started out with the whole, these tag team belts are cursed, but you know what? We want gold. With gold comes the money. That's why the Dirty Heels are involved. And then the Wolves, hey, Eddie's healed. We're ready to go. We didn't ever lose those titles. Let's have a Best of Five series. Great. So now you put the Dirty Heels, who are technically good guys at this point. Well, Austin Aries is always a tweeter, but Bobby Roode is the good guy. And you have them facing off, and the Dirty Heels can't get a win. For two matches straight, they got dominated by the freaking Wolves. And then it took Bobby Roode finally gaining some balls and going back to the Bobby Roode that made him great in 2012 and cheating and doing everything that it took to get the win, because the gold matters the most to him. There's that little subtlety of a heel turn that was needed, because if not, if you wouldn't have had Bobby Roode turning, all these people would have claimed foul. Well, hey, he was the good guy that took down the Bobby Lashley. Why didn't he turn heel? At least they're giving some credit and merit to it. And now these next two matches should be even more interesting, in my opinion.
Yeah, like I said, the match quality between the Wolves and the Dirty Heels, there have been some great matches, but that was the whole thing, is why should I care about the story?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Spud story, on the other hand, it really drew me in, because the whole night for this past week was just him questioning whether I should cash in my X Division title or the world title. And you had just different wrestlers come up to him and say, yeah, you should do it. No, I don't think you should. I'm going to, like Austin Aries was saying, maybe you should just hold on to the X Division title.
That was a beautiful touch.
And you had EC3 going, Spud, you're a gazelle. You got it. You can cash in. But that's just the benefit of EC3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was.
So I love the fact that they played up the fact that, should I, shouldn't I? And the only part I didn't like is the fact that he lost the title to win it back.
Mm-hmm.
And then cash it in a week later.
That was my biggest complaint with this whole thing, is because it was 2 years ago when Chris Sabin did the same thing. He lost the title to Austin Aries and then won it back like the next week, and then went on to cash in on Bully Ray. They did something similar with Kenny King here, and I kind of like how MVP carried on the story of why he wasn't there with Kenny King this week by saying that he was in timeout, alluding to his verbal confrontations that he's had on Twitter. So it, I like how they play that story up there, but Spud being in that ultimate underdog role and them having built him this way, and then his promos about how much this title means to him, I bought in fully that this X Division title means absolutely everything to him. So having that add-in of Austin Aries come in and say, you know what, I thought this was going to be a great idea, but it doesn't seem like it's turning out to be as great of an idea as I thought. Maybe because this does mean so much to you and you've worked so hard to get here, maybe you're the one that just doesn't cash in. The way that they worded that promo was perfect for me. And then having EC3 now going into next week, knowing that Spud will have to defeat Kurt Angle to get that title after just having cashed in his belt. And if he doesn't, or if he does, he's still going to have to face Austin Aries, or Kurt's going to have to face Austin Aries at the end of the night, all while EC3 is pissed off after having thrown this giant festival for being named number one contender. He gets bumped not only one place back, but two places back. You know he's going to be a wild card in there somewhere. He's going to do something to piss somebody off, and it's going to screw somebody somewhere down the line. It was that cliffhanger. It was that building momentum into a story that makes me want to see what's going to happen next week. They did a wonderful job with that aspect this week.
Yeah, but now the question is going to be, where do they go from here? Because you know you're going to have EC3 interfere somewhere. Does that lead into EC3 versus Kurt Angle? Does that lead EC3 versus Austin Aries or Spud again? I mean, where do we go from here? So that aspect made me want to tune in next week to see what happens with that storyline.
What's very interesting is that they're doing this all without an authority figure right now. So basically, if EC3 screws Austin Aries, Austin Aries has a complaint or a gripe that he got screwed out of his cash-in. And that EC3 has a gripe that he's the number one contender. So you could have an Austin Aries versus EC3 mini feud for 2 weeks to build a number one contender for Slammiversary. That could be the route that they go. They, in all honesty, I could see them giving Spud a one night win and then having it be EC3 or a Kurt Angle versus Aries as a rematch at Slammiversary, because that match will sell tickets. I don't care who you are. That, from a technical wrestling standpoint, would be an amazing match. But the build, this concentrated effort in EC3 so far, makes me think that it's going to be EC3 versus Kurt Angle at Slammiversary, and there's no better way to get momentum on Kurt's side than having him go over both Spud and Aries, even in screwy fashion, on Destination X. There's a lot to consider.
I was going to say, I totally agree with that.
There's definitely a lot to consider in this, and there's a lot to consider with everything that's been going on with TNA and especially Destination America and Ring of Honor. Fun little tidbit that I'll throw out there is I had a conversation with a couple people, and I believe Kat has heard this before, but an idea being pitched about how Ring of Honor and TNA have been working this angle ever since before TNA got on Destination America. They brought up the points about MVP throwing out there that none of the talent was made known of this, and that's putting a little crack in the divide, and how Roderick Strong was backstage at a TNA event while Bobby Roode was backstage at a Ring of Honor event, and how you'll have more people crossing over with like an Austin Aries going to a Ring of Honor, and they trade out Aries for an Adam Cole coming over to TNA. All the while, this having been planned as the next big competition in pro wrestling, this is what I have been clamoring and claiming for the longest time, is that there's not going to be another big spot for that number one contendership in wrestling business. Nobody's going to compete with WWE again. Nobody has the network reach that Turner had in the money being funded into their company the way that WCW did. So what better way to create that competition than to do it for the number two spot? Right now, you arguably have that with Ring of Honor and TNA going head-to-head. Lucha Underground hopefully getting more and more traction, and then Lord knows what GFW will be whenever it ferments. Right now, the wrestling alternatives out there are so great and so many options for whatever you want to find that if they do this right and they do have this cross promotion going on between ROH and TNA, it could be something that is vital to getting people back into wrestling as a whole, not just the mainstream that you see on WWE every Monday night or every Friday night, Thursday night. I'm sorry, I forgot they moved. Not just that mainstream stuff, but the things that fans of places like NXT who are getting that alternative to the mainstream have an outlet to go to and give more people opportunity to grow. Exciting times in the wrestling business.
Yeah, I think 2015 and 16 are going to be it's the year of the next explosion, the next wrestling boom.
Exactly. I've gone on the record right now and saying that we're currently in that boom period. The only thing that we don't have that we had in the last wrestling boom is the fan base. The wrestling fan base has dwindled off and dwindled off, but right now the groundwork, be it in NXT, in WWE with their developmental system, be it with the emergence of people like a Dean Ambrose, Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, the new generation, the new crop of people that are going to hit that top peak in WWE, and then this new generation of an alternative that there's other places to find guys that put on another good product. That is where the audience is going to grow. Consistency. Consistently put that out there, consistently show that improvement, you'll start winning people back. And I think that's what we're going to see in 2016, is that boom will be declared the moment that the audience starts growing back up over 4 million, over 5 million consistently. The house shows and the events growing in numbers, more people showing up to live tapings.
I think the big thing is going to be WWE. Since they're leading the charge, they're determining how the wrestling business is at the moment.
Exactly.
So them going into WrestleMania in Texas, of all places, with that 100,000 people arena that they're trying to fill and break the record of how many people are there, I think that's going to be the lead into the boom. Because if they're packing it with 100,000 people, they're going to have to do A-plus shows every single pay-per-view leading up to WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah.
And that, there's going to be a lot of people that trickle down and watch things like TNA, watch Ring of Honor, watch Lucha Underground.
Mm-hmm. And you're seeing it already. I mean, that Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, excellent. Top-notch. Unstoppable.
Oh, yeah.
Top-notch. They've done really good, especially cramming in so much in such a little time frame. They've done a really good job of setting that bar of leading the industry. I put a lot of credit on Triple H for that because I think it's his way of thinking of allowing a person like Kevin Owens to come in and be that horse, that stallion, that Clydesdale that you can hang that yoke on and just let him go. He has proven to be a great commodity in a short period of time. Some of the other signings that they've done, the builds with people like Adrian Neville, the builds with Seth Rollins from FCW to where he is now, I think that Triple H is making a difference, and it's starting to show because I see Vince giving more and more trust to these guys. To allow Kevin Owens in his first debut match to go over John Cena, that says a lot because we all know that Vince is still in charge, and for him to allow that is a pretty big step forward.
Yeah, one thing I do find funny is the more WWE talks about Ring of Honor and how all these guys have came from Ring of Honor, be it through the DVDs or stuff like that, people are going to try to tune in the Ring of Honor, which is the lead-in for Impact Wrestling.
Exactly. Well, I'm honestly hoping that it gets to the point because I know that in the past, Dixie Carter has had talks with Stephanie McMahon. They've said so publicly on both sides, said that they met each other, they enjoyed their conversations. No bad blood there at all. I don't think Vince has ever admitted that, but with the old guard going out and Triple H having this idea more about the industry rather than the WWE business itself, I think you're going to start seeing a little bit more leniency. Maybe they're not going to say, hey, did you watch Impact last night? But if someone like an AJ Styles comes in the next, say, 3 or 4 years, you might actually hear the names TNA mentioned on WWE. Now, I know people are in the crowd right now throwing their hands up saying, bullshit, egregious, never happened. I honestly think that Triple H is more invested in the wrestling industry than he is in the WWE business. That's why I make that claim. That's why I give Triple H props.
I mean, they've mentioned Ring of Honor before, so I wouldn't see why they wouldn't do TNA that way. Well, once the old guard is out, that is.
I'm wondering if they ever mentioned Jon Moxley and CZW, because that's one promotion I can fully understand why they wash their hands of, but if they've ever mentioned him in CZW.
I think they did, but it was the Destruction of the Shield DVD. Showing where they all came from.
I gotcha. See, if we get a Moxley DVD the way that we got a Bryan one, and they actually get old footage from CZW, that would be quite interesting, because he cut some of the best promos in that company.
It would be the promos, because match-wise, I don't think they would ever put any of that stuff on there unless they black and white the entire screen for 30 minutes.
Exactly. It's his match with B-Boy at Cage of Death was just... God, Moxley was so bloody in that match. But, all right, before we get out of here and before we wrap this thing up, I want to know if there is a Ring of Honor crossover with TNA. I want you to name 3 guys that you want to trade from each company. And I would like to know why you would want to trade those 3.
Oh, hell.
I put you on blast. See, I didn't put this in the notes. I put this in the notes for me so I have time to think about it, but not for you because I'm putting you on the spot. You're on the road with DRG. We're on the Detour. Wrestling Alternatives, damn it. Let's go.
There's a lot of Ring of Honor guys I don't necessarily know. I could see the Kingdom if they are signed with exclusive Ring of Honor. I know they're Wrestle New Japan and are in Ring of Honor as well.
No, they are exclusive to Ring of Honor.
I wouldn't mind them going to TNA. It's because you have a good tag team plus a valet, which you don't actually have in TNA right now.
Mm-hmm. And the history with Matt Hardy there is a built-in storyline itself to have the Kingdom come in and turn on Matt Hardy, who was their buddy. Now you've got the Hardy Boys versus the Kingdom on both ROH and TNA television. That's a moneymaker angle.
Now that's for TNA... putting talent in ROH, that would be more difficult. You could do some of the guys like Spud or EC3, EC3's already got a thing going on with certain Ring of Honor guys, so I could see a storyline going there.
Right.
I could see the Dirty Heels. Austin Aries, I believe, had time in Ring of Honor.
Austin Aries, yes. He made his name in Ring of Honor and Dragon Gate USA.
Yeah. So he could go back to a huge welcome back, stuff like that, I could see. Mm-hmm. That's a really tough choice, because there's not a lot of TNA guys I could see that would get over in Ring of Honor.
Right.
Because if you do have the split, they're going to end up being heels.
Exactly. Well, I don't know, with the history of someone like Austin Aries, him going back to Ring of Honor would be acceptable. I think Eddie Edwards, the way that he left ROH, would be acceptable as well. But Davey Richards, with the way he left Ring of Honor, I'm pretty sure that crowd would chew him up and eat him. And you don't really want to do that to your top babyface tag team in TNA. But to create that...
I don't know why I didn't think about this one. Kenny King could go back as a heel run.
Oh, yes, he could.
The way he left Ring of Honor.
Yes, he could.
I don't know why they didn't count on me.
Kenny King and Low-Key showing up in Ring of Honor. That would be interesting.
That would be a big heel run there.
I heard the idea pitched about Bobby Lashley versus Moose, which is interesting to me because, no, not just because they're two black guys, but because of the size and their athletic backgrounds. Moose doesn't have the MMA background that Bobby Lashley has, but they both have the football background together. They both are premier top-notch athletes that are striving in a second sport as best they can, and both guys are just great to watch. I think that would be an interesting inter-promotion. That would be the what you would call a Goldberg versus Stone Cold from the whole WCW-WWE debate is those big guys, big names, what would they do if they paired off with each other?
That would be interesting. I have to see some more Moose's matches, so I'll get back with you on that one.
Moose is still learning. That's the biggest thing, is he's a young guy. He's the Goldberg in the situation. I hate comparing Lashley to Steve Austin, but that's a comparison I could draw. I think that.
So you could take Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Which ended up being a dud, but.
That probably could be a fair comparison, because Goldberg would have the veteran status in that match at that point. But there's so much potential if there was a crossover. I would love to see it. Like I said, the idea of Dixie Carter walking into a Ring of Honor event, it just floors me. It drops my jaw and makes me salivate at the amount of heat she would get from walking in there. And then to have Roderick Strong come in, who has been in TNA before, come in and say, this company abused me, this company used me, they didn't do shit with me, I went to a company that's actually this, that, and the other. He could get over really quick as a heel in TNA. But we have to look at it from the business side. Do you really want that company's spreading some slander about your company? There's a lot that we have to factor in from all perspectives, not just the fan stance.
I think it would be good if they can get New Japan on board, have Bullet Club versus TNA, with AJ Styles leading the charge.
Yeah, because you've got AJ, ex-TNA, of course, the face of TNA.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Young Bucks, who were Generation Me.
Generation Me.
Then you have Doc Gallows, who was Doc in the Aces and Eights. Shit. The only members that weren't in TNA are Kenny Omega, which I'm not sure. I might have to fact check that. Kenny Omega and Machine Gun Carl Anderson. That would be interesting. And then you could have it paired off to where you do Bobby Roode and Austin. Well, Austin Aries, he's always going to be that tweener, that person that can flip either way. But to have, like, Bobby Roode, Kurt Angle, I want to say Eric Young, but his heel run right now is too good for them to just drop. There's the Wolves, several people in TNA that are loyal to TNA at the moment that would be really smart for them to put up against them. The old guard of TNA versus the new guard. Oh, man, you got my appetite wet. See, this is why I had Biohazard come on the Detour, because when it comes to talking TNA, we're the two people that can do it in an unbiased way and have a good time with the conversation. Yes, we're fair and balanced. We'll call bullshit bullshit. But we're still going to be fans at the end of the day, because that's what it is. You're a fan of the product. That's why you watch, right?
That is exactly why I watch.
So if anything else, hopefully at the end of this conversation, you guys take away that, A, nothing is fact until it's proven fact. So while I love the traffic that comes along with the annual death march of TNA going out of business that the IWC always stirs at this time of year, while I love it and it's comical, we've had this same thing proven year in and year out, that it's not fact until it's fact.
They've been saying it since around 2005. So.
Exactly. On the second note, we know that Destination America is excited to have both Ring of Honor and TNA programming. They have put out a 3-hour block dedicated to wrestling. As a wrestling fan, you shouldn't be hating on anybody. You shouldn't be picking a side of ROH is better than TNA or TNA is better than ROH. What you should be doing is saying, you know what, Destination America? This is a pretty cool opportunity, because I can't remember the last time two major promotions underneath the number one promotion are on the same network on the same day. That's a pretty cool moment in history.
It just shows that they really want to be the destination for wrestling.
And I think that's what they've done for me. If they put Lucha Underground on there, I'd tell you what, I'd quit watching USA altogether. Because if they put those three shows on together, I would go to bed happy not watching anything on USA. I would watch my NXT on the network, and that be that. And finally, last
thing. I think if they did Lucha Underground, they would have to do GFW and do it on Friday nights or Saturday nights or something like that.
Oh, going up against SmackDown? I guarantee you that.
On Thursdays, going up against SmackDown, that would be funny.
Oh, I guarantee you that if they had New Japan from Access, GFW, and then Lucha Underground, that they would be a pretty stiff competition once they gained the fanfare. That would be a combination. Oh, man. All right, lastly, before we get out of here, I want you to plug yourself, Biohazard. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at the BIOHZRD King. You can follow my band at Follow Vultures on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram at the Biohazard King. I recently got Snapchat.
What?
Name is just Biohazard King.
You're on Snapchat, son? Are you on Tinder too?
No.
Oh, no.
I had it for all but a day, and I went through all the matches in a day, and I was like, yeah, there's a bunch of really nasty looking chicks.
Oh, you got tired of swiping left.
I think I swiped right 3 times.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, as you know, I am the host of the Detour, Mr. DRG. Get at me on Twitter at MRDRG_WIR. And I am going to pitch this question of the week. If you could have a crossover with Ring of Honor and TNA, name two talents that you would cross over to each promotion and put them in a storyline. Give me some feedback. Let me know about this. Get at me on Twitter and respond to me. I'll DM you my email address so I can read this on the next Detour, because this has so much meat on that bone and it tastes juicy, y'all. You know that hip hop's online. That means that we're getting out of here. I'm sitting in front of the house talking to my friend Biohazard. And we're going to cut this call short. You guys be good. We'll catch you down the road. Gone.